we need to be careful about not downplaying the significance of this. Typically, a showrunner outranks episodic directors. In terms of Narnia, people bringing Narnia to the screen, we had Andrew Adamson, we had Michael Apted, and now we've got Matthew Aldrich.
Welcome to Talking Beasts
from NarniaWeb.com,
where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis
and keep a watchful eye
on the latest Narnia movie news.
This
is Talking Beasts.
Everyone, welcome back. I'm Glumpuddle.
And I am Rillian.
And we've got some major, major Narnia Netflix news to talk about today. Matthew Aldrich, who's known as is best known for being the co-writer of Pixar's Coco, has been chosen as the, quote, creative architect of Netflix's Narnia adaptations. And the official announcement says that Aldrich will work across both series and film and serve as creative architect on all projects under the deal. And the Hollywood Reporter says the plan calls for a wide range of stories from across the Narnia landscape told in a set of movies and at least one series. So reiterating the whole movies plus series approach. So really, and as you might imagine, this caused a bit of a reaction among Narnia Webbers, believe it or not.
Just a bit.
I know, right? So Narnia Fan 7.
I'm bottling it all in right now. I'm waiting until you say, I'm going to let you read the comments. I'm going to let you read your stuff and go through your spiel. And then I'm going to explode on you.
No, we have a system here. Comments first. So here's what other Narnia Webbers are saying about this potentially huge, huge story. So Narnia Fan 7 posted, quote, I was starting to hope that when Netflix said they were making series and films, they really meant they were going to do one or the other, but hadn't decided which. But I guess they are indeed doing both, which is both confusing and worrying to me. And Jonathan Paravel replied to that, saying, there's a potentially huge plus side that might work in our favor. Some books might be suited to being a miniseries, and some more suited to being a feature film. And then Telmarine posted, quote, how many times are they going to announce a director or writer? If we got a movie, every time we got an announcement like this, we would have finished the entire franchise already, which is a bit of an exaggeration, but I sympathize, absolutely.
Like, if they did a movie every 2 or 3 years, we'd be done by now.
Impending Doom posted, quote, looks as if they took a risk and hired a relatively unknown creative rather than a big studio name for the project. My optimism is slowly increasing. And finally, Fireberry posted, quote, excellent choice, Netflix. Coco is one of the best animated films ever. With huge emotions, sincere spirituality, cosmic scope, plenty of playful humor, and world character detail, I'd call that a good warm-up to faithfully expanding Narnia. So, with all that said, giving us a taste of how Narnia Webbers feel, Rillian, how do you feel about Matthew Aldrich being the creative architect of this, whatever this is going to be, movies and series, apparently?
There's so many thoughts going on in my head right now. Okay, so for the Matthew Aldrich portion, I don't know enough about... Okay, I will start off. I saw the movie Coco. It's the only movie credit of his I've seen. I really liked Coco. If you haven't seen it, it's visually one of the most gorgeous films I've ever treated myself to. It's absolutely stunning. The storyline I really enjoyed, partly because it's very countercultural to the typical follow your heart and do whatever your inside desires make you want. I had a lot of depth to it that I enjoyed. It tells me that maybe they're going after some creative talent rather than... I always roll my eyes when I see some animated movie come out, or then you see the trailer, right, for some animated movie, and you look at the name credits that flash on the screen, you know, Patrick Stewart, James Earl Jones, right, you know, Andy Sandberg, you know, like all these, you know, major names. It's like they're just trying to buy talent because they can't create it, I guess. And so, you know, that part is encouraging, but... So yeah, you can only make so much of a leap, you know, like if you have the director of Shrek doing Narnia, I mean, you and I both know that doesn't, in and of itself, it really doesn't mean a whole lot.
It doesn't have to, at least.
It doesn't have to. Because, you know, Andrew Adamson, I thought, obviously cared about the integrity of the stories, and all of us were afraid of fart jokes. You know, not all of us, but a lot of us.
Coming out of Shrek,
oh boy, here's the direction they're going.
Right. So let me start off by talking about this term creative architect, and I'll get into some of Aldrich himself. Haven't seen that term used anywhere before, but at this point we're all assuming that it's just a fancy term for showrunner. Obvious comparison would be David Benioff and D.B. Weiss on Game of Thrones. So when we talk about Game of Thrones, we talk about, yeah, it's their show. That they're now, I don't believe they've directed any Game of Thrones episodes. They have writing credits on many of them. But really, they're charged with the overall story. The overall, here is the arc of the story. Here's how we're going to do this. And that could be an especially important role if they're doing movies and series at the same time that interact with each other, and someone's going to decide, okay, what's a series, what's a movie, how do they connect exactly? If this is indeed just, okay, he's the showrunner, and they decided to use a different term for it and call it a creative architect, we need to be careful about not downplaying the significance of this. I think even among myself, because I was unfamiliar with the term, and I'm also not as familiar with the television process, very familiar with movies, not so much with television, I think it took me a while to kind of it to sink in how big of a deal this could be. Typically, a showrunner outranks episodic directors. You've got a showrunner who's really the guy. It's really,
yes, I would agree.
It's really their vision. Then you have directors and other writers who come along, and they're kind of boots on the ground. But the showrunner, it's theirs. In the same way that we think of, I think there probably is. You know, in terms of Narnia, people bringing Narnia to the screen, we had Andrew Adamson, we had Michael Apted, and now we've got Matthew Aldrich. This could be the next guy.
Think back to the different TV shows. Really, it is on a TV show, it is more the writer as a driving force. Because, yeah, the episodes will have different directors, but the writer will have more of a footprint on every episode, whether it's approving the script or writing the script.
Right. Well, even there's usually even multiple writers on a series. So like we have a showrunner who's the top guy saying, here's the story we're telling and here's the tone I want to. Basically, what we would call a director. We're just mixing up terms here, but in essence,
but even like people talk about like Joss Whedon directing, Buffy and Firefly. Well, actually, like he was a writer who also did a lot of directing.
Uh-huh.
He did his directing too. So that's right. Why people. They would think of him as a director because they're accustomed to movies. But the reason that they had the power they did or a consistency was because the writer was the same. And that's what you see with a lot of different shows. Now I'm blanking on it. The Gilmore Girls, and I have not watched all the episodes, but I was very patient and polite when my wife wanted to watch them with me. But because she went through the whole thing and she explained, yeah, like on the last season, the original writer left. And I guess there's a lot of fan reaction and the direction of the whole show completely changed. And then for the last Netflix season, the original writer came back. And then it's like the original vision was kind of captured again. So, with TV shows, you have to think more about the importance of a writer. I agree.
So it's a confusing thing because we're so used to, especially on this show, we talk so much about book to movie adaptations. We very seldom talk about TV adaptations. And so, but all this to say, for all intents and purposes, he's basically what you think of as the director. He's the guy driving all this. It's his creative vision. He's going to have to go out and find other directors and writers maybe to collaborate with, but he's the guy at the top. He's the architect. And like you were saying, and like Impending Doom said, he's a relative unknown. I mean, he's not Steven Spielberg. And I don't know how I feel about that at this point. I see what Impending Doom, I see what you're saying, but I almost wonder if I would feel a little bit better if they did have someone who had a name and a distinct style and was a little more famous, because then I feel like, okay, they're hiring someone to come in and really tell a story, not someone that's just going to come in and take orders. I don't like it. Now, so, increasingly so with movies today, not so much at all Netflix productions. I'll address that in a second, but it really feels like a lot of the big creative decisions are being made by the guys in suits, the CEOs of the studios that, look, they're not a CEO or they're not in a big managerial position because they're great storytellers, unfortunately.
But sometimes,
that's not how it works.
Do you think, though, sometimes you can have both? What I mean is the guys in suits make a decision, okay, we don't like the direction you two directors are going with Solo. We're going to cut you, bring in Ron Howard, and he's going to – and Ron Howard's a very – accomplished director with a lot of his own ideas, but like, hey, Ron, we need you to just go and fix this the way we wanted to.
As far as what can happen, obviously there is no you do it this way, a great movie comes out. Obviously, there've been movies where it was a very much a studio driven thing, and it still came out and it was great. And there's been obviously plenty of movies where the artist had to have their way and had their vision, and it was terrible. Obviously, both have happened. I personally would rather have them take a risk on someone's distinctive vision rather than trying
like
to...
like Peter Jackson.
Yeah, rather than play it safe and have, you know, 12 executives in suits voting on, well, what should we do with the story? I'd rather them take a risk. And both are a risk. I'd rather have them take a risk on kind of an auteur, an artist with a clear, confident vision. Mm-hmm. That's just me. Both are a risk. But anyway, we don't know what's going to happen here. But that's kind of my... that's kind of the way I tend to lean with the whole issue of him being relative unknown. I'd rather have them find someone who's confident, going to make their vision, rather than someone they just want to push around. Joe Johnston, I read, is someone who they were trying to find someone who was just going to take orders, essentially. Go make the product that they want. I hope that Matthew Aldrich has got a clear vision. Here's what I want to do, and they'll basically just let him do that. Might not turn out well. Might turn out bad, but I'm willing to take a risk. Now... This might come as a bit of a surprise hearing me talk like this about, you know, the concern about Netflix, you know, breathing down his neck and just wanting someone they can give orders to, because I've been saying so much whenever we talk about Netflix that, hey guys, Netflix, their big thing is they let creators do what they want. There's a lot of creative freedom at Netflix, and they're willing to take risks. And it makes sense why they take risks, because they can appeal to a niche audience much more so than a major movie studio can. But the reason I'm concerned that that might not happen this time, in this particular case, why this might be a departure from Netflix's usual practice, is the growing sense that they're trying to make something that as a response to Game of Thrones or Amazon's upcoming Lord of the Rings series. And if they view this as not just another, this is not just another series for them, this is could be their tentpole series. This could be the thing they're hoping will go on for several years or a decade, and this expanding universe of 3,000 characters, you know, as Mark Gordon put it. It's almost like I worry that Netflix's ambitions might be too high. And if that's the case, they're probably, if there's that much on the line for them, then unlike productions they've done in the past, they might not be willing to just take a risk on someone. They might just want to say, okay, here's the movie we want. Please go do that. So that's my concern there. And the fact that he's less known makes me wonder if that's what they're looking for. If they got someone who was much more established, I'd say, oh, I guess they're going to let this person really just make their vision.
So part of what I see happening is I think that Netflix and a lot of big studios are realizing, but where the value is now is in some kind of cinematic universe that you can control. Here's what I mean. I think what they started to see with they saw this with, you know, Harry Potter, and with Warner Brothers, and like then now hey, let's continue this with Fantastic Beasts. And please don't. I'm not trying to oversimplify. Everything is a money grab. I'm not trying to do that. But from a studio perspective, I think they think differently than like directors will. You know, I think what they saw with The Lord of the Rings. It was kind of constricted by some of the, or I should say really Tolkien in general, was kind of more constricted by some of the rights issues. They had those rights going back and forth with The Hobbit, kind of restricting it. But I think they saw, oh, holy cow, now Amazon has the Lord of the Rings TV show. That's something that they can kind of control the direction, control the flow and the size of the cinematic universe. They've seen the value that this that Star Wars and Marvel have been to Disney Corp. Marvel, it's just going to be this thing that just goes on and on and on. And the more the control they have over it, the better. You know, with Disney, like they wanted complete control with, now we're going to do these different spin-off series. We're going to do an animated series. We're going to do a real live action series. We're going to do more movies. We're going to maybe do more trilogies. You know, and everyone's kind of vying for control over these different universes. Netflix had a portion of Marvel's with the TV shows and through the Defenders and with the Punisher, and they lost all those.
That's all going to Disney Plus, I guess.
It's all going to Disney Plus. So it's all about I won't say it that way because it's not all about that, but a lot of these studios are seeing the value in some kind of cinematic universe you can control, whether it's Middle Earth.
Yeah, universe really just meaning a world that we keep on coming back to and can keep on expanding.
They want Narnia to have that potential for them. They don't want Narnia to be, well, there's 7 books. We're going to obviously do 7 movies.
Right.
I think they want it to be the potential of, we can do whatever we want. If we want to do a movie, if we want to do a miniseries, if we want to do a full series, we have that option. And it could be a both. I see it kind of being a both and thing. I mean, I could completely see, I mean, you have something like, you have The Lion. They could very easily do a Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie instead of a Magician's Nephew movie. Do a Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie and then do a TV show bridging like the second to the last and the last chapter of the book.
Right, and that kind of gets us into potentially scary territory. I think most Narnia Webbers would agree it's a potentially scary territory of going off book, significantly expanding on the stories way beyond what Lewis wrote. That's something Dot and I talked about in a previous episode. Of course, you were not a part of that, Rillian. So I don't want to get too much into my emotions on that in this episode. Maybe we can do a whole episode just on that in the future. But needless to say, very few Narnia Webbers seem especially excited, we'll just say for now, by that idea of going significantly expanding on the canon.
And this is what happened with Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones initially was something that was more limited to R.R. Martin's vision, and then it kind of became its own entity as it, you know, surpassed the books in terms of the timeline. Like, the books weren't all written, and like, well, we're going to keep making the series. We're not just going to stop for a couple years while you're publishing books. And so the show kind of became its own thing. Now they're talking about a prequel series. But I think once it did that, I think from a studio level, some fans, I've never watched past the first episode of Game of Thrones. Sean Bean was one of my favorite actors. And I thought, oh, I'll watch the first episode. And it never hooked me. So, but a lot of fans I know have very commonly said it declined in quality, or specifically in writing quality, after it passed up where the books were. But from a studio perspective, it still made tons of money. And now it's going to, you know, a prequel series will probably make a lot more money.
Which Georgie Henley is going to be in.
So, you know, a lot of these, but now I think the studio, with the show kind of leaping off past where R.R. Martin's books are, it's kind of its own thing now. It's like, look, you can go experience the books, you can go experience the show. We're not bound to the waiting for him to publish books like the Harry Potter movies were.
Uh-huh.
There was no way back in the day, at least I don't think there was any way that Warner Brothers was thinking, let's just release the movie ahead of the book. That wasn't going to happen.
Right.
But Game of Thrones has kind of become an entity that the studio can control. And I think that they're wanting they want Narnia to become this big, powerful beast that they can kind of make it go whatever direction they want.
Oh, I still see Game of Thrones as being, I've seen a lot of the first season. And I'd say I'm fairly familiar with it, though. And I'd say that my perception of it is that it's seen as David Benioff and D.B. Weiss's vision. It's theirs. It's not just a studio control thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But that was true.
It is. Yeah, I'm not saying that they didn't. Yeah, right? I agree.
And that was true with Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings movie, of course, where it was very much his vision. But when everyone, the vultures start circling and they want to replicate it, then very often that attitude of, oh, something really cool can the people love, we've got to make it too, that it tends to be a studio assembly line thing.
Yes, but I think what happened with Game of Thrones is with those two guys, like, they were successful. If they're being really successful as the create with the two guys, you know, taking the reins, the studio's fine with that.
Yeah.
As long as they're still successful.
Yeah, and with Netflix, I think the sense is, again, because they have such a niche audience, their sense is, hey, let's find someone that understands our audience probably better than we do. We should just let them do what they want. We, the CEOs, we're probably not the target audience of this show because it's so niche. It's not like a movie where you're trying to make it this broad appeal, generally speaking, especially something like Narnia. I'm realizing now how there's probably some people listening who are going, wow, what Glumpuddle's speaking so pessimistically? He's been so optimistic about Netflix, you know, the past several months. And even before the Netflix announcement, I was saying, why don't they do Netflix? there's so many. Really, what's changed is I'm realizing now how much Mark Gordon's kind of Game of Thrones comments kind of made me worry that, oh, maybe Netflix isn't just like, let's make a cool Narnia series and we'll give it to someone. It'll be something really unique and niche. So maybe this is a tentpole. There's a growing sense that this could be a tentpole. This is a big deal for them. And so I that makes me wonder if they'll lean towards safer. But there's so many things here that really could be so awesome, but so the opposite. I hear they want to do a Narnia movies and series that work together. And on one hand, I say this could be either just they're milking it because they've got to do the Game of Thrones, where it's this big, you know, I keep using that word universe, but this the ever-expanding balloon that gets bigger and bigger and you can add more and more stories. It's either where they're just trying to milk it, or this could be more than we ever dreamed. This could be, well, they're going to say some movie or some books like Dawn Treader, for example, that could be a really great series. And some stories like, say, The Silver Chair, that could just be a great kind of one-off standalone kind of movie. Having that flexibility, that could be awesome. So that could go either way.
I think it is partly flexibility because Game of Thrones, I'm not hearing any rumblings about a Game of Thrones movie. I think it's because they want to be able to have the freedom to go in whatever direction works. And you know, if every single Star Wars TV show was a complete failure, they wouldn't just keep making it season after season after season.
I mean, again, so much of this sounds so pessimistic for me, especially in relation to how optimistic I've been. I think that when it was first announced, I was so optimistic because of the potential to make something so unique and not having to please everybody. But in the past few months, I've seen some indicators, especially the Mark Gordon interview, that, oh, there's reason to fear that we might be back where we started as far as having to cram the Narnia we love into a formula. It may sound pessimistic, but I'm really right in the middle. I'm really caught between my initial optimism about what could happen and new fears about what it might happen.
Yeah, you were a
lot
more optimistic in the past.
Yeah.
I haven't changed a whole lot. I feel like some of my pessimism is being realized because I've kind of had these inklings for a while, but with less evidence to kind of back it up. It's more like the gut feeling is turning into more of an informed opinion.
So much of this sounds so pessimistic from me. And on a more positive note, I think I've watched hours of interviews with Aldrich this past week and read a bunch about him. He seems like a really good guy, really humble guy, everything I see about him. And I too really enjoyed Coco. Thought it was a very good movie. Pretty original, pretty gutsy idea for a pretty gutsy premise for a big studio movie targeted at families.
And even the ending, like the way that, and I won't ruin it if you haven't seen it, but even just the, because so many films, I get so sick of the, you know, follow your heart, whatever this thing is you just want really badly and things will work out really well, because that's just not real life. And I felt like that movie was much more tied to real life and the real life lessons that have to come.
So yeah, there's most definitely very all the things I've been saying the past several months are still true. There's still a lot of potential here. So this is my insightful comment I'm going to leave you guys with. This might be good or it might be bad. There's lots of really valid reasons, a lot of things.
Let's
to
do
hope.
A status check on Glumpuddle's brain.
There's a lot of valid reasons to be excited that this could be something really, really different, really, really special. And there's also some reasons, most of which have kind of been growing in my mind the past few months, to say, no, this might just be another kind of generic fantasy thing, or just trying to pick up the table scraps of Lord of the Rings once again, and now Game of Thrones as well, just like the Walden movies were. It's very, in which case, the end result might possibly be good, but it probably won't be Narnia. I really hope that Netflix is in a risk-taking mood, and I hope they give Aldrich a lot of creative control. I'm willing to take a risk on someone. I'd rather take a risk and hand them the keys to the kingdom than constantly be breathing down their neck. And so that's the direction I hope this goes. And that's what Netflix has almost always done in the past, and I hope they continue to do that with Narnia. It's a risk. It might be he messes up. I'm willing to take that risk rather than just go the generic safe route. So that's my... That's where I'm at with Narnia Netflix right now.
I think where I am is like, yeah, would it be great if they decide to do something like, well, we'll do a movie of Finding the Woods, the Road Trip within Prince Caspian, and yeah, Voyage of the Dawn Treader makes more sense as a miniseries. Let's do a miniseries. I do not see that happening. I think the direction I see is it's going to be kind of like, here's our mainstream movies that we'll try to get into theaters and stuff, and we'll maybe use the books for the movies, and then we're going to have kind of like the Marvel movies, and then you have the Defenders TV shows. Like, here's the adventures of Corin, something like that. That's what I see it becoming, and I see it as a not just milking it. I think that's a little oversimplistic. I think part of it is they kind of want the flexibility to experiment and see what works well. But I think that it's not, I think what they see as working well is, see what I think of as working well is, this is a really great adaptation, both in terms of being faithful to the books and in terms of being really well made and being a great film or TV show. I think what they're going to be thinking of is it popular? And part of my reason for that is because this is following on Game of Thrones and following on the Lord of the Rings Prime. That's kind of, and I'm very skeptical about Lord of the Rings on Prime. I'll start watching it because I have Prime and I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, but I am actually much more skeptical of that than I am the Narnia Netflix. Because they're not using they're kind of like, hey, let's just go off into the Middle Earth universe as opposed to let's adapt some books.
Well, speaking of things that really could go either way, it's time for me to hear my stump question.
Are you ready, sir?
Yes.
Okay, this was submitted by Impending Doom. The question is, who are Azeroth and Zardina?
Azeroth and Zardina. That was something in The Horse and His Boy, I believe. Erebus speaks about them. And I believe they are they gods? There's something along those lines. So I would say they are gods that Erebus and her people worship. That is my final answer.
If that is your final answer, then you are correct. They are two Calorman gods. Zardina was known as the Lady of the Night the Lady of the Night and of Maidens.
And that's who Erebus tells her father she's going to make sacrifices to, but actually she's going there. Actually, she's just trying to make her escape, which is in my mind. Again, big thanks to the Logos Theater, that the reason that is fresh in my mind. All right, why don't you give us the outro?
You've been listening to Talking Beasts, a NarniaWeb.com podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. And be sure to subscribe and post a comment below or in the Talking Beasts Facebook group. You can email us at podcast@narniaweb.com, rillian@narniaweb.com, or glumpuddle@narniaweb.com. For the latest news on Netflix's Narnia, visit narniaweb.com. Look for our next episode on July 7. Until then, further up and further in.